WRFG 89.3 FM. You're tuned into Class Chronicles. We are here every Wednesday from 7 to 8. Hello, Joni. How you doing?
I'm doing well tonight, Felton. Hope you're doing well, too.
Tremendous.
Wonderful. We have a wonderful show with we have some guests in the studio and guests on the phone that are going to be sharing some wonderful information with us. I just want to say that the views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of WRFG's Board of Directors, staff, or volunteers. And who we have here in the studio with us tonight is Anita Beatty from the Metropolitan Atlanta Task Force for the Homeless. And on the phones, we have J.R. Fleming from the Chicago Coalition to Protect Public Housing, and we have Tiffany Gardner, who is with the NESRI Human Right to House. She is the Human Right to Housing Director, and we're going to be talking tonight about a very important event that's taken place in the United States, and that is that the UN Rapporteur on the human right to housing, Raquel Rolnick, just completed a tour of the United States and around the question of affordable housing and homelessness and so forth. So we're going to get some of those, some of the information on the tour itself and what can and has come out of the tour. So, Tiffany, hello, are you there?
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Tiffany. Thank you so much for being with us tonight. And JR, are you there as well?
Yes, I am.
Hi, welcome. From my old stomping grounds in Chicago.
Yes, I know.
I think things have changed a lot since I've lived there, though. And you're from the Chicago Coalition to Protect Public Housing, is that correct?
Yep.
All right. And Tiffany, can you tell us what NESRI stands for?
Yes, the National Economic and Social Rights Initiative. And we work with community groups across the country in a number of areas, housing being one, as well as health care, education, and work with dignity. And the role that we play is helping to build the domestic human rights movement by partnering with local community groups like the Coalition to Protect Public Housing, Mayday New Orleans, Picture the Homeless, and here in New York City, and helping them to incorporate a human rights message and human rights framework into their ongoing advocacy work.
All right. Well, thank you for that. Now, tell us a little bit first how this tour came to be.
Well, for the past couple of years now, housing rights advocates from across the country had been in touch with the United Nations regarding the housing crisis facing this country and the multiple manifestations of that crisis. In particular, communications were sent to the former Special Rapporteur, a man by the name of Maloon, regarding the demolition of public housing in several cities, and in particular in Chicago. And from those interactions with him, civil society advocacy groups here in this country were requesting that he make a formal fact-finding mission as the UN Special Rapporteur on the right to adequate housing to investigate the demolition of public housing as well as other major concerns. He put in a formal request to the U.S. government. Obviously, we were in a very different regime and administration over the past 8 years, so his request had initially been denied, and then it was put on hold. A year ago, his term ended. The U.N. Special Rapporteurs have a term for 2 years. His term ended, and a new rapporteur was appointed, a woman who was a Brazilian urban planner by the name of Raquel Rolnick. She was appointed as the new Special Rapporteur, and based on all of the submissions that the former rapporteur had made, she again began requesting that she could make an official fact-finding mission to the U.S., and the Obama administration granted her request, and she began her fact-finding mission this past October, and she was here for 18 days touring the entire U.S., looking in particular at the foreclosure crisis, the homelessness crisis, as well as the crisis in social housing, and social housing means public housing and Section 8.
So who accompanied her on the tour?
So the U.S. Special Rapporteur, and I should back up and say that Special Rapporteurs are particular positions at the U.N. There are Special Rapporteurs on various human rights. There's one on housing, obviously. There's one on health, one on education, one on food. And they are independent of the U.N., and they report directly to the U.N. Human Rights Committee. When a Special Rapporteur does a fact-finding mission, as I noted, they have to be approved by the particular government, in this case the U.S. government. The missions have two parts. One is they meet with officials, both local officials in the communities, as well as federal or national officials. So Raquel Roenick met with local officials in all the cities and towns that she went to, and she also met with our federal government. And then they also do civil society visits, where they meet directly with communities. And so NESRI, my organization, we facilitated her civil society meetings, and we made sure that during that portion of her mission, she met directly with impacted communities. She traveled to New York City. She traveled to Chicago, New Orleans, the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota, Los Angeles, and Washington, D.C. Of course, we wanted her to do much more than that, and she wanted to do much more than that. In fact, she really had a heart to come to Atlanta, knowing the situation there around public housing, and I know that Anita will speak more to that, but unfortunately there just wasn't enough time, and there had been an international investigation to the demolition of public housing in New Orleans, and so she figured it would be good for her to just go and visit New Orleans to follow up on that mission, and so that was going to be her southern part of her visit, but again, she was very aware of the situation in Atlanta and in other areas, too, where she couldn't get to.
Okay, thank you. So, JR, can you tell us a little bit about the Chicago Coalition on Public Housing?
Yes, the Coalition to Protect Public Housing is a resident-led organization of activists and organizers with affiliates and people, organization, clergy, and non-for-profits that came together to defend public housing. And to keep housing, definitely public housing as a human right. We felt that this organization was necessary, our founders did, because there was an attack on public housing through Hope 6 years ago.
All right, thank you. And Anita, can you just say a little bit about the Metro Atlanta Task Force for the Homeless?
Thank you, Joni, and it's good to hear Tiffany and JR too. Hi, y'all. How are you?
Hello. How's it going, Anita?
We are an organization of homeless people, service providers, some advocates, and representatives of the business community and local government. As a coalition, the task force operates, staffs the coalition, and operates the facility at Peachtree Pine, which is the center of great controversy. And let me just, may I say something about
sure.
Raquel Roenick and her visit? This was her second visit to the U.S. Since she was appointed. But back in Maloon Kothari's days, he and I served on an international board together, and we had all, including, of course, the folks in Chicago and Tiffany and NESRI, had all been trying to get Maloon to come to the States, and he tried to get an invitation. And then right at the end, 6 months before the end of his term, we were in Geneva bringing issues of housing to the Olympic committee in Geneva and trying to get some sort of statement of no impact, no negative impact on social rights and housing in cities that host the Olympics, to no avail, I might add. But Maloon was joking that he thought he had just gotten an invitation from the Bush administration, having asked for one for all those years, or 2 years that he served. And he was joking that probably some bureaucrat was on his way out and just said, I think I'll do this in the State Department. And he had gotten the invitation, but he had already scheduled Canada. So his last official report was Canada, and he was itching to come to the States and to Atlanta. So we worked really hard to try to get Raquel to Atlanta, and unfortunately, we believe there's been, you know, some resistance in our local government to have anybody come and examine the state of our housing and the criminalization of homelessness. So her schedule was rerouted this last time, and in spite of Tiffany's efforts.
Well, thank you for doing all that you did, Tiffany. I'm sorry, go on.
Oh, and I'd also like to add to what Anita said is that one of the things we wanted to make sure with this special rapporteur visit is that often when we have these UN missions, oftentimes these experts, because they're sort of so high level and fancy in that way, meet with national advocacy groups and often are sort of, you know, stay in the capital in the Beltway, Washington, D.C., and don't get out. And when they do get out, oftentimes they don't meet with community and community leaders like Anita, like JR. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that NESRI was very mindful to do is make sure that the organizations and the individuals that headed up each of those site visits that I named were people from the community, directly impacted people. So, for instance, in New York City, an organization called Picture the Homeless organized this site visit, and this is an organization, dynamic organization, made up of homeless or formerly homeless people. And Chicago Coalition to Protect Public Housing, J.R. Fleming, he was the leader of that site visit. In New Orleans, Mayday New Orleans, which is an organization of public housing residents, they led that visit. In Pine Ridge Indian Reservation, Bill Means from Olaga Community, Native Community, he led that visit. And in L.A., Becky Dennison from L.A. CAN, which stands for L.A. Community Action Network, led that visit. Mm-hmm. And so we were very mindful to make sure that people on the ground, people at the base who are really experiencing these issues had direct communications with her. And we're continuing to work with Anita and those that she works with to make sure that those in Atlanta that are directly experiencing these issues also mm-hmm. can continue to dialogue with Raquel.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back to continue this discussion. All right. We are back with our guests, Tiffany, JR, and Anita, and we are talking about the recent tour of the UN Rapporteur on Affordable Housing and what came out of the tour. Basically, it sounds, Tiffany, from the things you just said, that she really did see the real deal on housing in the United States.
I think she certainly did. I mean, we were in Chicago, and JR can speak more to this, but we took her to Cabrini Green Public Housing, Auckdale Gardens. She met with homeless youth with an organization called Hello. In New Orleans, she went and saw people actually squatting. You know, of course, the homelessness rate has doubled in New Orleans since Katrina. She saw firsthand the effects of that. She also went to the sites where public housing has already been demolished and where they're putting up mixed-income units. And I know this is something that Anita can also speak to that's happening in Atlanta. And this is really the nature and the tone of the visit throughout her 18 days here. And, you know, we got a lot of press, both friendly press, which is good, but also a lot of, conservative press and right-wing press saying, well, what does the UN need to be doing here? You know, they should be in Iran, they should be in Sudan, they should be in Zimbabwe. And, in fact, what her visit showed and demonstrated is that there is a housing crisis. There's a human right to housing crisis in this country that we need to take seriously, and it's been impacting poor and working class communities for a very long time, even before this economic downturn, and it's now beginning to impact other communities as well, and we need a real movement to really change our national housing policy. So what all of us who were involved in this movement, what we wanted to do was use her presence here to help build that human right to housing national movement and give it strength.
Well, what did you and Anita and JR hope to get out of this tour?
Well, if I can say, we always hope to use international guiding principles to impact domestic legislation. Using the human rights to housing framework for us has been very instrumental because we felt that we had to take a look outside to fix sometimes what's wrong inside. In America, we like Ms. Ronick said, we export so many policies, bad or good, but then we don't import a lot. And what we mean by that, like right now, there's no greater need for public housing in America than right now, as it was during the New Deal, which she talked about. You know, people are finding it hard to find employment. These foreclosures are at an all-time high. At the same time, we demolish public housing communities. While we have a growing homeless population with no answer to how do we end homelessness. So what we hope to get out of is a new approach that's inclusive of the people directly impacted on policy and on program implementation.
Well, another thing I think, in addition to what JR said, and all of that is absolutely true, we don't have an accepted right to housing in this country as a policy value, as a basic value to build housing policy around. And for us in Atlanta, you know, right, and when you begin to talk about rights to well-being and to support systems, you are marginalized often. And in Atlanta, we have a city with a government that is on its face supposedly progressive and inclusive, but behind that government are the controlling, the good old boy, good old girl network, which really does control public policy. And so we really think that nobody locally is ever going to be allowed to give a critique of the policy impacts, because Atlanta doesn't have any housing policy other than gentrification and reverse land reform. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, everything we have done legislatively in the city and in the state is to redistribute land and wealth to the wealthy and to take it away from poor people. So somebody at the international level to notice what goes on in our communities locally and nationally in terms of this administration's policy, which is really disappointing so far in terms of housing and all of our requests for demolition moratorium on public housing has gone without any response from this administration. So we're just hoping that there's a little bit of shame factor in the fact that the special rapporteur used the word shame, that homelessness is an absolute shame in this country. The U.S. should be ashamed of what goes on. We have the wealth to guarantee the right to housing to every American, and we do very much the opposite.
Well, that's absolutely right, and I'll just add in terms of the mission, everything that JR and Anita said is exactly spot on. We really identified four main goals, and which they spoke to. One is just acknowledging the crisis, that there is a housing crisis, and as I said, it's been impacting poor and working class communities for a long time, but our policies that have impacted them for so long are now really affecting everyone. Second, this right to participation when decisions are made around Hope 6, around demolitions, around cuts to Section 8 budgets, around homelessness policy, there's just no real participation from the directly impacted. And that's one thing that Raquel talked about again and again. And in each of the places where she visited, we had town hall meetings where there was participation from communities, and they spoke to her directly. And that's one of her messages she brought to our federal government. You need to listen to those who are in these communities, who are experiencing firsthand these policies. So that was our second thing, to really highlight that right to participation. Also, as Anita said, the acceptance that there is a right to housing, and really to be able to say to the U.S. government, these things that we've been telling you for all these many years, these things that Anita has been saying locally in Atlanta, nationally, that JR has been saying locally in Chicago and nationally, that we've been saying nationally, now we have this international body, this international expert, that's really given legitimacy to what we've been saying all along. And she did already release her preliminary findings, and they're, you know, spot on with what we've been saying in terms of the disastrous effects of these policies on the poor and really on all Americans. And then fourth, really to begin to build a real movement, a movement led by the directly impacted, a movement led by the people for human right to housing that includes all of these issues, homelessness, public housing, Section 8, foreclosure, a real movement led by the people that can really advocate and affect change in these policies.
And one other quick thing. Mm-hmm. Also, as Tiffany said, this country is full of ironies in terms of policy and the availability of funds to implement policy that is lagging far behind our fiscal capability, even in these economic times. There is plenty of money available, and there's stimulus money and recovery money available that isn't being monitored to make sure that it gets to the people who are in the most severe need. So we have a lot to do.
I wanted to just ask, any of you can answer this, but did the UN rapporteur, was she surprised by what she saw, or was she expecting that?
I would say in Chicago she was surprised, especially with some of the health conditions that they were living under in public housing, the lack of response time to people complaining about these health conditions that was caused by mismanagement and not keeping and maintaining the property up. But I think it was an overall surprise, because she was in a country, like she said, that was abundant in resources.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she was, I mean, she was really shocked, I think, in each of the site visits. And this is a woman that's used to doing these missions around the globe, so she's used to being in developing countries. And, of course, poverty in the developing world just looks different than it does here, right? But she was really blown away, as J.R. said, for instance, in Oakdale Gardens, which is a public housing community where President Obama was an organizer. When he talked about his organizing days, it was in that community. They have a wall there with all the names of the residents who have died of cancer. Mm. Oakdale Garden is known as a food desert. It's far away from anything. It was built on landfill. It has, I think, the highest cancer rate in Chicago. That was pretty shocking and jarring for her. The homeless youth that she met with in Chicago and in all of the sites was pretty shocking, as well as she also visited Skid Row in L.A. and she was very surprised. But I think really what she walked away being most surprised by is, as we've said, this is the richest country in the world, right? Mm-hmm. You expect mm-hmm. to see some of these issues in places where they just don't have the type of financial means, right, to address these problems. But in the richest country in the world, seeing, you know, 37 million homeless a year, seeing the demolition of over 100,000 public housing units for really no good policy but to displace poor people, and then seeing the collateral effects, the health effects, the increase in violence that's happening in Chicago because of the displacement, I think was really, really disheartening for her as well as shocking to her.
Did you were there any government officials? One, I guess, is were they allowed on the tour? Or would they have been?
Well, the way that UN policy works with special rapporteur visits is that they want to protect advocates and activists as much as possible because, as you can imagine, mm-hmm. In many contexts, there can be retribution after the visit is over. Mm-hmm. So with respect to them being allowed on the actual site visits, per UN policy, the government wasn't told by the UN of who she was meeting with on the ground. Mm-hmm. But we did have a blog for the mission, and I encourage your viewers to go to the blog. It's called RestoreHousingRights.org. And on that blog, we did put her itinerary and where she would be because we wanted to make sure that community members, everyone would be aware that it was a participatory process, that media would be there. But she did meet with local officials, and in some places like Chicago, the Chicago Housing Authority got very nervous by what, you know, we were showing her. We were taking her to the community, and they got very nervous, so they decided that they wanted to give her their own site visit and meet with their residents who, you know, loved the Nixon.
Yeah, that was
And and after that visit, she said, you know, she was even more disturbed having met with the Chicago Housing Authority and going on their tour than she was before, because she could see firsthand how really this whole mixed-income model and the demolitions were really just a sham.
J.R., did you want to add to that?
Oh, definitely. Like I think Tiffany just hit it on the head. You know, a lot of things that the Housing Authority attempted to do, or the city just in general, it made no sense. You couldn't explain the situation. There was no explanation for it. And I wanted to add something to like what Nita was saying. It's like all these funds are coming down via the stimulus, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, but it's not reaching the bottom.
Mm-mm.
And the Public Housing Authority is not doing what they're supposed to do with it. Because we're facing some evictions right now, some mass evictions going on a week before Thanksgiving.
Mm.
And because we know about the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act and other laws and things, we ask the question, and it's simple as this. Either it's one strike, a mistake, or a mishap, and you're out in America, or that our existing eviction and homeless prevention policies don't make sense. Because it makes no sense for, like, in the case of Lanice Forrest, who did everything right, that the city, the housing authority, would go through an eviction at no fault of her own, make her homeless, wait a month or two or three, and then find her some housing, when it makes more sense just to keep her in the public housing unit that she in.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of policies don't make sense. There are bad economic decisions being made. And I think a lot of this is happening because the people are not participating. That's one of the things I think the special rapporteur tried to stretch to the housing authorities and to a lot of government officials she met with when they try to intervene in, like, the visit process.
Hmm.
So no matter what they throw at her or what they say, there's no justification for anything that's going on or that's being done right now.
Well, another thing that happened right on with what JR said in Atlanta, we lost 3,200 units of perfectly good public housing because developers want the land that the housing sat on. And we had a good protest movement. The residents wanted to participate and turned out in meetings at each one of those community developments, neighborhoods, and tried to participate. But the Housing Authority, even there's documented evidence that they rigged the notes, you know, and the minutes of meetings and forged signature. I mean, it's just appalling, but the case is very well documented. It went to the Fair Housing Office in Atlanta, the regional Fair Housing Office. It didn't get anywhere because the deal that was done was struck in 1994 before the Olympics, that if we could just get through the Olympics, the city developers and the business community, the power structure, wanted that land to be redeveloped for upper-income folk. And so the deal was struck. We were told by a HUD official that President Clinton was involved in the deal to and that Renee Glover was part of the deal as she got the job. So those kinds of things were done policy-wise, land, you know, giveaways for developers. And the land was advertised as the new market, the next emerging market. We've got the document a year before the demolitions were even approved by HUD, but they were all the property was advertised to the development community to get in and bid on it because it just happens a lot of it to be near to the Beltline. But those kinds of policies and practices are not accidentally exclusive of the residents. They are conscious, intentional reverse land reform to the wealthy. And this city has been so guilty of that kind of racism and classism for so very long that now our property is in foreclosure and we're using this as a civil rights case and it's now in federal court. So hopefully all this is going to come to light very soon.
All right.
And I should say Anita is spot on with that one, and that was really one of the findings that Raquel Lonick made, and she really has been pushing this this real crisis that's developing where land and housing is being seen as a commodity and being commodified.
Absolutely.
Right, and not as a social good. And that's one of the things that she was, I mean, in terms of what she was really dismayed by here in this country is the fact that private interest, corporate interest, have really been valued over the needs, the real needs of people, and looking at housing as a real fundamental need for human development, civic participation. And with the evictions that are happening in Chicago, and particularly with Ms. Lanice Forrest's situation that J.R. was just talking about, they're trying to basically evict the folks from Caprini Green to get the public housing folk out. You know, Caprini Green is right near, you know, valuable real estate.
Gold Coast.
Exactly.
Right.
The same thing is happening to the poor residents of Iberville. Iberville is the last remaining public housing in New Orleans after they've demolished the Big Four. Iberville is a stone's throw away from the French Quarters. And so they're evicting people for very silly reasons, and then they fill up the apartments and don't let other people back in so that now they have a perfectly empty development that they can just demolish. And a lot of this, as Anita was saying, is really about, you know, private interest over the real need and the social value and the fundamental need that housing represents.
Same thing here in Atlanta with the Grady Hospital privatization. It's all the same movement to privatize all of our social resources.
Let me just remind our listeners, you are listening to Class Chronicles on WRFG 89.3 FM, your station for progressive information. We are talking tonight with J.R. Fleming from the Chicago Coalition to Protect Public Housing, Tiffany Gardner from Esri's Human Right to she's the Esri's Human Right to Housing Director, and Anita Beatty from the Metro Atlanta Task Force for the Homeless. And we are discussing the UN Rapporteur's Human Right to Housing visit, or tour, I should say, throughout the country, and the findings and the impressions she had, you know, during the tour. And I think what you've all been saying is so important because coming from the outside, so to speak, and looking at the United States, I think the media that we see here within the United States, and even the media that's outside of the United States, very often paints a different picture of homelessness, of public housing, of all the different things that we see firsthand and have lived through firsthand. It's different. it's different. It doesn't exist here, you know.
Right.
Everybody, the streets are paved with gold and all that. And I'm really, really happy that everybody worked so hard to get this tour to happen, and that where she visited and who she talked to, I think is just so important. If people, if the homeless are not speaking for themselves and the public housing residents are not speaking for themselves, something's wrong. Because they know firsthand not just how bad things are, but what to do about it.
And they're the greatest untapped resource.
Exactly.
In fact, they've been consciously excluded as resources.
Mm-hmm.
And there are regulations that HUD, I'm sorry to say, doesn't enforce that require that when there are maintenance contracts and building contracts, those residents get first dibs on the contracts, and that very rarely, if ever, happens. Yeah. Doesn't ever happen here.
Right. Well, so, probably throughout the country. I know when I lived in Philly, that wasn't happening.
I know right now, I think it becomes a issue of what's morally right to do, if not future. And part of that would be that there'd be a moratorium on eviction, a moratorium on the demolition of public housing.
Right.
I think it's not only a disservice to public housing residents to tear down public housing, but I think it's the ultimate disrespect for those people who are homeless. And that's a valuable resource and an asset to them to have a system like public housing in place. So to cure this crisis that our country is facing, both economically and through the housing market, like, it's very important that we stop looking at housing as a commodity, but an asset to humankind, human life, and human rights.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Right. The town hall meetings that were held, where she was able to speak directly with those most affected, in whether it be homeless or public housing, inadequate housing. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the most graphic examples of people being ill-housed or substandardly housed in this country, the things that may have affected her the most?
I think one of the issues, there were so many, to be completely honest, and I have to say, and again, tip my hat to the groups on the ground, the base splitting groups, the resident groups that led these visits, because they got a huge number of their community members to these town hall meetings. And each of these site visits that I named, there were at least 150 residents there. And in places like New York and L.A., where they just have larger populations, we had well over 300 residents there. And so it was just a very, very strong showing. I think all of the cities, there were some very, very disheartening testimonies. I think in particular, what really gripped her was the Chicago town hall meeting, and I'll let JR speak to that, but there's a huge increase in violence, youth violence in Chicago and shootings, and time and again, you know, the residents wanted to talk about housing, but they say, you know, we'll talk about housing if you want to, but we really have to talk about this escalation of violence in Chicago. And they were linking that escalation of violence to the displacement. And as, you know, the director of the Human Right to Housing Program at NESRI, that's what I do. I say, you know, when I talk about housing, I'm just not talking about housing. You can't talk about housing without talking about education, without talking about health care. Mm-hmm. It impacts everything. And this is really what the residents in Chicago were saying to her. And I know in her meetings in D.C. with the federal government, she spoke directly to the violence in Chicago and what residents were saying to her, and really charging them to really do a federal investigation into that escalation of violence. But I'm sure JR has more to say about that.
JR, did you want to add to that?
Definitely. I think the town halls was great with as far as participation and people getting to speak. I think it was sad, though, to have to sit there through all them testimonies and go, this is happening in America. When you hear people testify about violence that's caused by these forceful evictions, this displacement, when you remove 70% of a community in the name of mixed income model and force them into high crime areas, the only place that would accept a Section 8 certificate, where it's bad housing, where mold exists, forcing them on worse housing conditions. I think when a homeless youth testified, about their future, how bleak it looked, how the hope has been taken out of them. And they were looking for answers. I think all of these issues are all of our issues. Just watching Raquel, because I try to watch her and her assistant's expressions, you know, to see what their emotional state was.
Mm-hmm.
Hear people express emotionally. And remember, these are emotional testimonies. You know, they were expecting her to save them because this violence amongst our youth is going on. It's directly tied to your plans of your gentrification plan, your relocation plan, and testimony after testimony tied it all together.
Hmm.
Housing, the education, the health care, it's all one issue under an umbrella of human rights. Our human rights are being violated in so many sectors, and the most vulnerable population, the people at the bottom, are being hit from every which way they can and violated from every which way they can because they're not participating. So I think that testimony really keyed in on her at the town hall, to hear that testimony, then to go into the site visit and see the conditions and see what was going on resonated so well that it was almost unbelievable. Mm. It was unbelievable to her that this was going on in a new millennium in America, even in a new administration.
All right. Well, thank you for that. We do have somebody that called in. Is it okay if we take a call from a listener?
Sure.
All right. Hello, listener, are you there?
Yes, good evening.
Good evening. Did you have a question or comment?
I do.
All right.
Brief. This is Jorge from Radio Diaspora.
Oh, hello, Jorge. How are you, dear?
Greetings. I'm well. I'm just very, very pleased. I'm in a parking lot right now outside. So I'm trying to not to get pneumonia. But I'm just very pleased what I heard in the car from your guests and the linking for the first time that I know of international examining groups like the UN Commission and Raquel's in this particular case,
mm-hmm.
To make the U.S. internally, domestically, accountable mm-hmm. to the same standards that usually some liberals within Congress have I'm on someone's car, excuse me.
No problem.
Since the early 70s, some of us ever since the Chilean coup of 9/11/73, the other 9/11, the Kissinger, Pinochet 9/11, have been fighting to get first linkage legislation that is not being invoked in the case of Honduras right now, namely that U.S. bilateral military and economic assistance is immediately suspended in the case of a coup in the recipient country, but then to get it back at home has been a much, much longer struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And to hear that this is happening and to have a chance to get, I would like to be able to get and distribute as widely as possible Raquel's preliminary report. At the same time, also just comment that Brazil, where I've spent a good part of my life, is of course not free themselves
mm-hmm.
so far as what's going to happen with the favelas in Rio
mm-hmm.
at the time of the Olympics, or the Olympics mm-hmm. are already now
right.
being
mm-hmm.
bulldozed and prepared for.
Right, right.
So it's sort of full circle. Then there are groups like the U.S. Human Rights Network, JAMU's network,
mm-hmm.
that tries to make the U.S. accountable domestically for the Geneva Accords, for the ongoing process of Durban, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, to me, it's very encouraging. And finally, just the last thing, the Atlantans fighting for closure, that the mm-hmm. DSA, the Democratic Socialists of America, and GRUS, the Georgia Rural Urban Summit, have led a wide coalition. And five of them are now up, of course, for civil disobedience
right.
hearing
mm-hmm.
And possible imprisonment because they refused to leave Wachovia and Wells Fargo when they wanted to meet with the officers. So a lot of things seem to be coming full circle, and I just commend so much those who are reaching out and bringing the international functionaries or workers or appointees like Raquel and others into mm-hmm. domestic
right.
United States.
Right, absolutely. We're going to have to take a quick break, and we will be right back.
Thank you.
All right. You are back with Class Chronicles. And we have been talking to J.R. Fleming from the Chicago Coalition to Protect Public Housing, Tiffany Gardner from NESRI. She's the director of the Human Rights to Housing program, and Anita Beatty from the Metro Atlanta Task Force for the Homeless. And we've been talking about the UN Rapporteur's tour within the United States to look at the question of affordable housing. And I think, you know, many of the points that all of our guests have raised tonight are so important. And if you don't think there's a housing crisis in the United States, then pretty much you just haven't been looking. And we need to talk a little bit about what you think the future holds, how some of these questions of public housing and homelessness, what's the resolution? What can we look toward? What do we have to build toward?
Well, I want to just jump in a second, Joni. I think that public housing is now assumed to be, at least in Atlanta, irrelevant because it's gone. I mean, you know, we have some senior housing that's left because the seniors fought, but their constituents and their representatives take the seniors a lot more seriously than sometimes they take everybody else. And so we are dangerously close to accepting privatization of every support system, from housing to healthcare to education, as a way of doing business in this country. I mean, I'm looking at the fact that all of the parking meters in Atlanta have been privatized now. And, you know, these things are happening without our noticing. That's a tiny thing. But Grady Hospital closing down a dialysis clinic where there were 91 patients whose lives depended on 3 times a week dialysis treatments, and most of those, the majority of those patients, were undocumented or documented immigrants, and they were discarded as if they didn't have the value of American citizens, regardless of the fact that many of them lived here a long time and worked and had families, and now are dying. And that is a policy. Talk about death panels. The Grady Hospital Private Board is a death panel. And they're private business people who are making decisions, life and death decisions based on profit. They may be a nonprofit, but they're making decisions based on the bottom line, ostensibly. But we think there's a conscious pattern and practice of discriminating routinely and mortally against poor people to get them out of Atlanta. The whole gentrification issue is our public policy.
And Tiffany and JR, how do you see the movement developing, and what kind of things need to be done to safeguard and expand and deal with this question of affordable housing in the United States? Tiffany?
Oh, go ahead, JR.
There you are. Okay.
I'll go after JR.
I'm going to take one out of the Constitution. We the people must force our government to respond to the growing housing crisis and demand that we be ensured protection, not just for us, but our children's future. The work we do today will reflect the foundation for our children's future. America only reacts to a crisis when they see us, the people, coming together across races, across class, across our economic status, demanding that we be ensured some type of fundamental human right, if not just for us, but for our children's sake and our children's future. I think we're going to be okay. So when we start doing things like stopping evictions, taking back buildings, you know, taking back the land, when we start forcing Congress to listen to the people at the bottom, you know, because we're showing them right now. I know the campaign to restore, that's the campaign to restore national housing rights. I know. Well, Carol was shocked to see how interconnected Chicago, New Orleans, L.A., New York, D.C., you know, all of us are, you know, to see how all we made the connection. The people on the ground made the connection and came together and is moving together. We have to build this movement. People have to get out of that position of comfortability and being content and say, this is something I must do. I must get involved. We have to get involved. We have to get involved, everybody.
We also need to really force this new administration to do what it promised to do. Mm-hmm. The policy initiatives that are coming out in housing and health care are not promising. Mm-hmm. And if we're not urging and demanding mm-hmm. that the policies respond to the urgent need, then they won't. And most of us progressive folk are hesitant to demand anything of this administration yet. But we're into it now, and we know what HUD is doing in some of these cases, and there has been no response
right.
on the moratorium request, and right. it's been sitting there.
Yeah. And I would say, I think, absolutely right in terms of the vision and where do we go from here and what are the solutions. I think that, you know, I'm optimistic. I'm optimistic in that we do have a very different regime in D.C. now. We have an administration that was by and large elected by the very people on the bottom we've been talking about. Mm-hmm. We have a regime that the people on the bottom want to see do well. We are allies and supporters in that way of the regime, and I think we have to let them know that, because what I find whenever I go to D.C. and when I meet with the administration, there's this wall that sometimes goes up where they don't want to deal with communities, where
That's
they're
right.
afraid of communities, but they mm-hmm. need to understand that we're their base. The folks we're talking about are their base.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Anita and Jay are absolutely right. We have to push the administration. Mm-hmm. That's the only way it's going to
mm-hmm.
happen.
Mm-hmm.
One of my concerns in my federal meetings is, well, let me tell you the hopes. One of my hopes is that in all of my federal meetings I've had since the election, those folks are thinking. They're thinking very critically. They know that huge mistakes have been made, not just in the past 8 years, but in the past 30 years with this whole neoliberal regime, right? They know that huge mistakes have been made. They're thinking critically and hard about how to change that.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, they're still in the same box of privatization, corporatization.
They are.
They
right.
still are. So we have
right.
to push them. And as Yarn and Anita both said, we have to start a movement that is multiracial, multi-economic, because, you know, even if you think you're middle class,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're still working hard, and, you know, you're one
right.
check away from being homeless.
Absolutely.
So it has to be a movement by the people. And I encourage folks to go to the website, restorehousingrights.org. You can learn more about Raquel's visit. You can download the preliminary findings. And then when her final report comes out in March, you can also download that. And, you know, join the campaign to restore national housing rights. Anita's group is a member, JR's group is a member, and as JR said, we have members from all over the country, and we're trying to build this movement led by the people for the people.
All right. We've only got about 2 minutes left. And I again want you all to give your contact information, a website or whatever, so people can find out more about your organization and about this whole effort. So, Tiffany, again, give the website.
Yep. So my organization, NESRI, National Economic and Social Rights Initiative, the website is NESRI, N as in Nancy, ESRI, and the movement's website, Campaign to Restore National Housing Rights, that website is restorehousingrights.org.
Okay, and JR?
The same thing for contact information, what
mm-hmm.
campaign we connected to.
Mm-hmm.
But I did want to put this out there. We need people to call 312-742-8500, ask for Eric Garrett or Lewis Jordan. Stop the eviction of these fours.
Hmm. All right. And Anita?
From the Metro Atlanta Task Force for the Homeless, we have a hotline for people who are experiencing or fearing homelessness. It's 404-589-9495 and 1-800-448-0636. But also we have a webpage, homelesstaskforce.org. And we are constantly asking people to get involved on this issue.
All right. Well, I think that's all we have time for right now. I want to thank our guests, Anita Beatty, Tiffany Gardner, and J.R. Fleming. Thank you so much for the wonderful information, for the wonderful work that you are doing, and inspiring us all to get active and involved. So thank you for visiting Class Chronicles tonight. Take care, and thank you.
Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you. Thank you.